Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. My name is Roger Z. I'm your host. Today we've got the fabulous Tony T. from the Tony T. Orchestra.
Thank you, Roger. How you doing?
Good. Tony, I've seen your name around for years. I've actually seen you play for years. I never went up to you, but I know you used to play Sweetwaters when it existed in White Plains.
That's correct.
A lot of memories in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad it's gone.
Yeah, it's a shame. Like most clubs, they're here, they're gone, you know.
Tony T, you made your name as a drummer and as an orchestra leader.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of tough to be an orchestra leader and a drummer.
Very, very difficult, because you're sitting behind the band and people think, gee, how are you going to run this show? How are you going to run the band? But there's certain things when you're in an orchestra. There's certain signals that we use, how to go to bridges and verses and how we converse with the keyboard player and guitarist. And it is pretty simple once you do it. It's just that a lot of drummers don't do it. Usually the leader is a keyboard player, a guitarist, or a lead singer, and they're out front. So it's very difficult in the background for a drummer, but for me it's second nature.
Well, I led a band for many years as a bass player.
Mm.
Part of the issue that I had is, but you don't sing. Well, you sing backup, I should say.
Yes, I do. Actually, I do sing lead.
Oh, you do?
I stopped, though, because I wanted to concentrate more with the drums.
So, when I was leading my band as a bass player, I mean, I would color the music through my choice of songs and my vocals, but depending upon the guitar player and stuff I had, it could be wildly different.
Oh, yeah.
Each time.
Yes, that's not consistent, definitely.
So I found, for me, I finally made the switch back to guitar because I felt the guitar would color the band a little more, although I still get comments from some club owners. You know, the band sounded different tonight.
Really?
And I go, that's a good thing. You don't want me to sound the same every week.
Well, I'm glad you did go back to the guitar, because when I heard you, you're fabulous.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a nice jam at Enchiladas down in Elmsford a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, we did. That was very exhilarating. I had a good time with you up on stage.
That's right. Frank Pisani.
That's correct.
Was on keyboards. He's been on the show.
That's correct.
The guitar player was Greg.
Greg Hanna, lead guitarist and vocalist.
And you had a percussionist.
Yes, actually, Charlie Powers has joined us in the Tony T group. He is a lead singer, mainly, and is a drummer. But when he came into the band, I didn't want to give up my seat. I have to stay behind the drums.
Right.
So we got Charlie on percussion. And me and Charlie have worked up a couple of arrangements to go with the band. And believe it or not, it sounds fantastic. It's a great concept to have a trio with then adding a percussionist. Usually you have a guitarist, keyboard player, singer, sax player, maybe two guitarists, a keyboard player. I don't think most of the club bands out there today have a percussionist. Unless you're Santana or Tito Puente or something like that, you know. So by bringing Charlie into the picture, he actually accented the sound that I like to portray. I mean, we do jazz, we do funk, we do R&B, we do top 40, and having a percussionist definitely accents all of those menus of music.
Now, Tony, it's very interesting. You sent me an email, and obviously from your email, the biggest influence in your life as a musician was your dad. And you said something very interesting to me. You said in the 60s, while everybody was listening to rock and roll, I was listening to 40s swing.
That's correct.
Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, my dad was a professional saxophone and clarinet player for the Benny Goodman Orchestra.
Wow.
And right around 1939, right after the Carnegie Hall concert, which was 39-40, he went into the war. And he played in the war. He played under Ray McKinley's band, which took over after Glenn Miller, you know, ceased. And he was just a tremendous player. Saxophone, clarinet. He played all kinds of, you know, wind instruments, reed instruments, horn, sax, trombone, trumpet. He even played the drums and piano and guitar a little, you know. So,
It's funny because you're talking trombone and trumpet. Playing both of them is difficult because the embouchure.
Very, yes.
Then playing sax with a reed instrument is completely different.
Totally different. And I wish I do have recordings of him that my brother made back in the 60s on a reel-to-reel, which is totally unbelievable. He used to play the clarinet and the sax in his mouth at the same time in harmony. It was amazing.
Yeah, there was a Rosson Roland Kirk used to do that.
That's correct. There you go. Yeah. So, but in the 60s, I was brought up in the late 60s, early 70s. And it's the truth. While other people were out there playing rock and roll, I was actually playing in my father's wedding band, which at the time was all cha-chas, foxtrots, you know, rumbers. And I remember when the big song that came out that my father, he said, oh, this is a great rock tune. You know, it was done by, can't think of the name of the band, but Spinning Wheel.
Right.
I can't think of the name.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears, yeah. And that song came out, and that was a big deal for him because that was a big rock tune to play. But more or less, I stuck with him for a while doing the weddings. And then, of course, I got into Emerson, Lake, and Palmer and Led Zeppelin, you know, like we all did. But my roots barely came from my my teacher, which was my dad. Yeah.
Wow. Must have been hard to break away.
It was very difficult to break away. At times, I wanted to break away, and then at times, I wanted to go back because he was the guy that made me what I am at that point, and today, of course. But, you know, he would always tell me, we got a wedding on Saturday, you know, and I'd say, yeah, no problem, Dad, and I'd go in and do my foxtrots and rumbas and Peabody's, you know, at the time. And, of course, then on Sunday, we'd get back into the basement with my guys, and we'd do the Zeppelin and ELP, and my father, what are you doing down there with all of that noise, you know? But he would actually come and actually play the sax with us at sometimes, you know? Because, of course, Led Zeppelin had a lot of blues, so he liked that, you know?
That's right. You know, it's very interesting. I just picked up that DVD, How the West Was Won.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You're familiar with that?
I have it.
And, you know, I thought they were better earlier. I liked him when he was playing the Telecaster more than some of the Les Paul. But they're an amazing band.
They definitely put a mark on rock and roll. I think they're the best rock and roll band ever.
It was interesting because they played almost the same show for many, many, many years. They didn't diverge much, but they're fantastic. I mean, they're real players.
Yeah.
They're real players, and to me, they're the pinnacle of what I call blues rock.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're rock, but it's coming from a lot of blues.
Yeah.
Now, Tony, you give drum clinics. Talk to me about that.
Yes, I do. I've been teaching downtown at the National Drum Association for 25 years. I originally started in a drum corps, St. Benedict's Drum Corps. St. Benedict's is the school that I went to in Throgs Neck, and I learned marching drum, all my rudiments, and I adapted that to teach right away. I started teaching at an early age, and I've adapted teaching in my life. I like helping kids. I like helping people, and being a teacher is very difficult. I mean, I know teachers out there that teach regular school. It's incredible what they go through. So me at a lower end, just teaching kids for an hour drums, I want to pull my hair out. I mean, it's insanity.
Don't do that, Tony.
Well, yes, I know, Roger.
You're going to end up like this.
I still have a little while to go. We may be on the same track someday. I got the St. Anthony going up there. But, you know, I really enjoy teaching, so I took it to the next level, and I got certified to teach rudimental drumming, which I've adapted myself, because I didn't know at the time, my rudiments to a regular trap drum set. And not many drummers, when I was growing up, did that, unless you were Buddy Rich or Gene Krupa or Louis Belsom or somebody that was amazing. So I adapted the rudiments to that, and I started teaching rudiments on a drum set.
Explain to our viewers, and to me, what rudiments are.
Well, you play guitar.
Yeah.
In order to play guitar, you have to know your notes. You have to know where your frets are, and you have to know how to play a G, a B, chords, and a D minor, and everything.
Right. So what are the rudiments on a drum?
When you get behind a drum, if you don't know your rudiments, what do? You play a beat, and then when it comes time for a drum solo, a lot of the drummers out there don't know their rudiments, so it's the same thing. You constantly hear the same drumming all the time.
Give me an example of a rudiment.
Oh, my God. Well, like a paradiddle.
Oh, I love that. What is like a paradiddle? I used to know what it is. What is
paradiddle? Is a very simple rudiment. It's right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left.
Can you and pound it on
sure. That? Just doing my fingers here. So.
That sounds like Wipeout.
You know, Wipeout was kind of like a single roll. It was. That's correct. That was Wipeout. A little. It's a solemnity. Is a similar pattern to that, but not only a paradiddle, but double roll, single roll, the long roll, 7-stroke, 9-stroke, 11-stroke, 14-stroke, flam radicule, flam tap, a rough, the triple paradiddle, double paradiddle.
They're like a bag of tricks.
Exactly. It's like having candy in your pocket and going out there and just, hey, this is great, you know? But if you have those rudiments and you know those rudiments, that makes you one step above a drummer that doesn't have them. And like I mentioned before, when you see people like Buddy Rich play, Gene Krupa, who I adore them unbelievably, Louie Belsom, even the drummers of today, you know, Vinnie Caliuto, Dave Weckl, Steve Gadd. Actually, Steve Gadd came from a drum corps, and he adapted that to playing the drums, and he's fabulous, you know. These drummers today that play, that know their rudiments, definitely stand out in the crowd than a drummer that doesn't know their rudiments.
Does Ringo Starr know his rudiments?
I don't think so. I don't think so. When he first started out with the Beatles, he was your regular rock and roll. Great drummer for the Beatles. I mean, I couldn't picture the Beatles without Ringo Starr. But I don't think Ringo Starr was a soloist, drummer soloist, you know. Like Carl Palmer was a solo drummer.
Right, right. Well, Ringo also was from the school of I never practice.
But he's got a ton of money and he's making millions, so he made it.
You know, someone told me a funny story. I work with this Englishman, and I lent him my CD that had the song Yellow Submarine on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a very astute ear. And he played it and he listened to it and he came back to me. He said, Ringo is singing completely off pitch here. Completely out of key. And I'm thinking Yellow Submarine. I never noticed he was singing out of key.
Yeah.
And then I took it and I listened to it. And then we listened to another song with a little help from my friends.
Correct.
And what happened was, as he told me, is that they have an instrument now that can take the voice and put all the notes in tune. Like if you're a little off push, pitch, somehow it can put it in tune, and they invented it for him.
Is that true?
I don't know. That's what he told me. They invented it for him, but you know nowadays they have that. So anybody can sing, and they can put you in. As a matter of fact, they have something with drum machines where they can take the drum machine and put it a little out of whack so it sounds more human.
All right, let's take it easy. Let's keep the drum machines in the stores now. Yep.
Well, we were talking earlier. We were talking, you told me you had a gig for 8 years or 6 years at this hotel. And
oh, yes.
Like, I mean, it's like everything in the business. Everything's great until it's not. One day, new owners come in. And you were telling me you played there for 6 years, new owners came in, and now they hired DJs. So here's the $10,000 question, like I don't know the answer. Yeah. How did you feel about that?
Pretty rotten. I felt very kind of like violated that a DJ was coming in to take over a live band's job.
Now, one of the things that I noticed, like if I go to bar mitzvahs or weddings or whatever, sometimes the DJs, including the dancers, have more members than a band.
This is true.
And part of the function is the DJs are kind of like, not the DJs, the dancers are kind of like, they go out and they grab you and they make you dance. So in my mind, I'm thinking, well, in essence, what we've done is we've traded out musicians for dancers.
Subsequently, yeah. I mean, so many times I'm the house band at a couple of different catering houses, and we would go in and set up, you know, like about 6 o'clock after a bar mitzvah in the afternoon, and these DJs would have unbelievable equipment. I mean, like like they were playing Madison Square Garden, speakers and ridiculous and stage and everything's made up with wood and you have one or two DJs spinning the CDs in the back, and then you have one or two maitre d's out front,
right,
with about three or four girls and two guys, dancers. So you're 100% right. The only problem is that, I mean, being a musician, I don't get it. I mean, hire a live band. You have six or seven live musicians coming together to provide music for your affair. I mean, I at the end of the wedding, years down the road, I mean, I guess a guy wouldn't turn around and say, hey, that DJ was really great for your wedding. You know, the band was really great. And the DJ is just spinning a CD, you know?
Well, you know, I think if that was true, then they wouldn't be taking over the business.
I know. Well, it's a money thing, too.
I don't think they charge less.
Well, now you're right. They are getting big bucks up there. I mean,
well,
really,
maybe they do. I don't know.
Yeah, you could probably get a DJ for about $800 to $1,200 for a wedding, you know.
One DJ or a DJ and
one
a couple of...
One DJ, maybe two guys that come in to do a job. And I really shouldn't say that because there are very good DJs, the good guys that go out there and do their job well. You know,
right.
But it's taken away from us, and it's been taken away from us for the past 15 years.
Yeah. Well, ever since they invented radio, it's been downhill, right? Used to be the only way to hear music was to hear live musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could put live musicians on the radio. Now, instead of going to the bar or the dance hall, you could stay at home and dance with someone. So,
yeah,
you know, and now it's down to... you want to cut an album, you can have a guy do it all in his computer with the beatbox and everything. But I'm actually happy to hear I've got a 15-year-old daughter, and so when she drives in the car with me, I let her play the music that she likes, and I'm actually hearing a little guitar in some of it.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's good. Very good. Very good. I'm glad to hear that, because my 18-year-old son listens to music that would bust your eardrums.
Yeah, well, my daughter's big thing is she likes like, I would call it Beyonce-type pop.
There you go.
But she loves rap. She and her friends just love rap, and I think they like, I don't know what it is they like. I guess they like the beats to dance to.
It's possible.
I'm not sure. Well, everything changes. But you're still working. You're still
yes.
at gigs.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us some of the clubs that you play on a regular basis?
Oh, my God. For a very long time, I've been a Broadway musician, 25 years, and I've been in and out of Broadway shows throughout those years.
Didn't you do a show today?
Did a show today, did a matinee, which was very, very interesting.
And which show was it?
Mamma Mia.
Okay.
Which was very nice. I enjoy it. The ABBA music gets to me sometimes, because sometimes after 9 months or 10 months of listening to ABBA, you get a little, but it's okay, it's music and I enjoy it, it's fun. It pays the bills, you know. And then I did a jazz gig down in the city, Clubby Lanes, which was very nice, a quick jazz thing, 2 hours. I'm basically a working musician still. Every day I have something that I'm doing, whether it's down in the city in Jersey, my agent will call me up and say, Tony, tomorrow you're going to be here, and next Thursday you're going to do this, and I just say, okay, sounds great, because that's where I get my money. So I'm a working musician, that's what I have to do. Some of the clubs that I played, my God.
Well, now, I mean, for example, you're an Enchiladas in Elmsford.
Yeah, these are Westchester gigs, Enchiladas. We played over at Tino's, which is up the road from there. We played Pete's Saloon, Katona Grill. We've done jobs all over Westchester County, Putnam in Connecticut. In the city, 55 Bar, the Cava Cove, the Jazz Club. You know, wherever there's a club and there's live music, I'm there.
Well, you cover everything from trio jazz to heavy metal. I saw you did a gig at Cafe Rio, and you were talking about doing Black Sabbath and Deep Purple and...
Led Zeppelin. Yeah, that's another thing. I've always taught my students to be a universal drummer. Don't be typecast, and don't be a rock drummer, and just don't be a jazz drummer, and just don't be a blues drummer. Be a universal drummer, like a universal ball joint. You could fit anywhere. And when you do that, you can play with any band, anywhere, anytime, and you sound great. So, of course, I've adapted that since I was a kid with playing with my dad, playing all the standards and the Peabody's and the waltzes, and then I'm doing Zeppelin and ELP, and then when I got onto Broadway, I was playing professional chart music, and then I got into the jazz people, and then I did wedding music. So I did everything. So now, yeah, I can play jazz, I can play top 40, swing, dance, Motown, jazz standards, rock, blues. There's nothing that I really can't play.
Let's get to our standard questions.
Okay.
Okay, and I know you prepared, so that makes me happy.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, so the standard desert island question. Mm-hmm. You're going to a desert island, you bring a boombox, and you can bring two CDs. Which CDs would you bring, Tony?
Well, the first CD I would bring would be the live Battle of the Bands concert with Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa. That's my first CD.
Wow.
Yeah.
What, it's called Live Battle of the Bands?
It's actually called Battle of the Bands, Battle of the Drummers, actually. Battle of the Drummers. And it's Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa on stage battling it out, which is very interesting.
Who won?
Well,
in your opinion?
As much as I adored and loved Gene Krupa, always, I've taken so many traits from Gene Krupa. Nobody could take anything from Buddy Rich because the guy was insane. I mean, the guy was amazing. But Buddy Rich was just incredible. He was so fast. And everything he did was accurate and fast. It was like somebody adapted a little engine in his thumb and poured gas in it, and it just went. It was ridiculous. You have to slow down films, actually, to find out what this guy was doing. So, but I would bring that CD, Battle of the Bands, because that would keep me occupied for a long time.
You don't know every single lick on that CD?
I do. I can't play them all, but I do.
Okay.
I do.
Your second choice?
My second choice would be Welcome Back, My Friends, to the Show That Never Ends, Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
Wow.
Yeah. That's back in the 70s, 73.
What were some tunes on that one?
Well, they did Talkus. They actually did Welcome Back.
Right, I remember that.
Impressions, so. Carnival 9.
Right.
That was amazing. Just, oh, the music that they adapted from orchestrated versions that Keith Emerson did was just the only band that ever did it.
See, I used to play Lucky Man in a band. I enjoyed more the Greg Lake compositions.
Yeah.
Lucky Man and Doo-da-doo-dum.
Oh, from the beginning.
Yeah, right. You used to do that song.
We actually fool around with that with a friend of mine, very good friend of mine, bass player, Ed Feig, who's an excellent bass player. And we get together once in a while and we fool around with that tune. Yeah.
Yeah, they're a very interesting band.
Yeah.
And now Asia is out touring.
Oh, my God.
With and they're actually going to be at the Fairfield Playhouse pretty soon, and they got Carl Palmer in that band.
I heard. It's, wow, to go see Carl Palmer would be, like, amazing.
I heard they're still pretty good.
Well, I'm sure the band is really, really good, but Carl Palmer has to be unbelievable. I'll tell you a quick story what happened to me.
Sure.
Down at Media Sound Studios back in
the day.
Yeah. I'd have to say, my God, maybe 72, 73. And I was in high school at the time. And I was playing, fooling around. My friend Mike Morley was a sound engineer down there. So I was playing. We used to go down at 11 o'clock, and I used to play on the drums. I used to do these ridiculous things and all twirling and speed, the rudiments and everything, just to get my practice in. And some guy came over to me. He said, "Hey, that's pretty good." He said, "What was that?" And I actually remembered it was a Flam Paradiddle Rademacule, which I just did it faster and faster and faster. I, of course, ended it off with a double roll and the singles, you know. And he said, "That's really good." We started jamming together, and I looked at him. I said, "You look familiar." I said, "Oh, my God, you're Carl Palmer." He said, "Yeah, I know." So I actually met Carl Palmer. And that was like a...
Now, you said you were jamming. What was he playing?
Well, we sat down and played the drums. We actually did. We were trading fours back and forth.
So there were two drum sets set up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
There's always a lot of drum sets. Well, they weren't physically set up. We had to bring in another tom, another snare, a bass, a hi-hat, and we put them together, and then we played, you know, facing each other.
Which so nicely segues into my next question.
Uh-huh.
Which is putting together your a couple of dream bands, or one dream band, you know, dream band per set, where you can use anybody living or dead.
Mm.
So would Carl Palmer be like the second drummer in one of your bands?
Well, I hate competition, so I wouldn't pick Carl Palmer, no.
Okay, so who would be in one of your bands?
My God, just stemming from the best that I could think of, I'd love to have Chick Corea playing keyboards.
Okay.
And Stanley Clark on bass would be awesome.
So this would be Return to Forever.
Oh.
The acoustic or the electric version?
Electric version.
Okay.
Electric version. That was such an awesome band. Eddie Gomez, of course, I'd have Eddie Gomez come in and play upright bass as well. Blue Lou Marini from Saturday Night Live on sax.
The Blues Brothers, uh-huh.
David Spinoza on guitar, you know. I actually play with these guys.
These are all like 70s session guys.
Exactly, exactly. I'm picking these guys because they are just, in my eyes, great musicians. As to, I would say, including Frank Pisani, who I play with now, and John Smith, who is an amazing guitarist who I have a trio with that we're off the hook. These guys are incredible. But I like to play with great musicians because it gives me an education on to play better. You have to play up to these guys.
Yeah, it's, you know, it lifts your game to play with people whose game is a little higher rather than
low.
Goes
to another level. You know, so of course I enjoy the Zeppelin and I enjoy the rock and I enjoy all that stuff, but when you play with great players, I'm constantly learning, and I think everybody should always constantly learn. You can't never say, I know everything. You'll never learn everything. You have to keep on playing with people and learn more and more as you go.
Yeah, I find that I play around 1.5 to 2 hours every day, play some electric guitar, acoustic guitar, and every day there's one thing I may learn. And it's amazing.
Yes.
It's amazing.
It's inevitable, sure.
Well, it's funny because people say like musicians peak at 20 or 25 or 30, and I find that's bull crap.
No.
I find that you can just keep learning and just refining what you do. Anyway, thank you so much for coming down, Tony.
Roger, it was my pleasure. I enjoy this immensely.
See you next time with your trio.
Thank you so much.
And we're